Okay, good evening and welcome to everybody for our annual pre-Pesach workshop, one of the favorite nights, one of the favorite gatherings of the entire year when Pesach is really upon us. I don't know about you, that's at least the way I feel. That's when I have to do a crash reading of all of the Hechsherim books to make sure there's nothing new this year that I missed. So welcome, thanks for coming back, and hopefully we'll address all of your questions. Here's my promise to you. My promise to you is that I am looking to make your Pesach easier, not harder. That if you follow what I tell you, you will spend less, not more time on preparing for Pesach, getting your home ready. And that in fact, this is not a time for spring cleaning. It's not a time for rigorous activity. It is a time to follow the halacha, to follow it beautifully in a way that will leave you not a shmata for your Seder, but leave you invigorated and leave you enriched and elevated and ready for your Seder. So buckle your seatbelts. Here we go. Whether you're on Zoom with us or you're in the comments on Facebook or on YouTube, please ask any questions that you have and we will try to get to them and manage all these platforms simultaneously. So any questions, follow up, anything that's not clear, anything you want to raise, please feel free, take a moment and address it in the comments. I want to begin, before we even get into the halacha, by sharing with you an insight of the great Rav Yitzchak Mayer Morgenstern, the Beyam Derechecha, who put out a little kuntros, a little pamphlet about Pesach. And I want to share with you some inspiration, even before we get into the nitty-gritty, even before we get into the minutiae and the details of what to do. I want to talk about why we do what we do. Because if all we are is scrubbing and cleaning and wiping and koshering and shopping and cooking and preparing, then we'll feel that we're not going from slavery to freedom. We're going from freedom to slavery in getting ready for Pesach, which of course is exactly the opposite of what we're meant to be doing and how we're meant to be feeling. So Beyam Derechecha, Rav Yitzchak Mayer Morgenstern, you're familiar with him if you learn with us on Wednesday mornings, Living with Emunah. We're going through another one of his magnificent Svarim. And he put out this little kuntros, this little pamphlet, this little booklet on Pesach. And in it, he says the following. He writes, "Be'emes yesh harbe lehezbonin." There's a lot to think about when it comes to Pesach. "Lahavin es hachomer anorah shel achilas chametz," to understand why is chametz the arch enemy? Why is chametz such a villain? Afshu davar amutr b'chol yimos hashana. He asks an amazing question, which we don't have time to. We're not going to get into tonight, but I submit it to you for your careful consideration, and that is. Why is chametz such an arch enemy for the duration of Pesach when it is permissible the entire year? Chametz is the one food. It's the one food in our repertoire that at times is permissible and at times is forbidden. All other food is either kosher or non-kosher. It's permissible or it's not allowed. Chametz 51 weeks a year, no problem. Es gesund, enjoy. 1 week a year, it's this villain. We go on a search and destroy mission. We become OCD, obsessive, compulsive. We burn it, we destroy it, we relinquish ownership of it. We pledge to hate it, to break up, to never get back together again. So how could you have this food, which is so prohibited for a week of the year, and yet is perfectly permissible the rest of the time? It's a great question. He says, in order to understand this, we have to take a detour. And we're not going to try to understand it. We're just going to go for his detour. Ki rak al yedei hachana ru'uya, the only way to tap into the light of this holiday, the only way to be elevated and illuminated by the energy of Pesach, to understand why matzah is so noble and why matzah is heroic, to understand why chametz is our arch enemy and villain, is hachana, preparation, readiness, effort in advance. In order to be prepared, in order to get ready to accept and receive the light of this holiday, b'tzura chazaka, in a strong way, so the light penetrates deep into the soul, so that it's not something that lives in the superficial or on the surface, but we want this light of what freedom means. This is the holiday of freedom. We're not going from freedom to being enslaved, we're going from being enslaved to social media, to pop culture, enslaved to our material possessions, enslaved to physical pleasure, enslaved to power, money, friends, followers, whatever is our particular vice. We're going from our sense of being enslaved to freedom, but the only way we get there is by getting ready. It takes hard work, it takes preparation. V'az afsha laila over my hair, misha is tchonein, yizke latze sem kinyan murga shel chol hashana. The night passes by quickly, and I don't care, as is an ancient Jewish custom, Everyone, we missed out on this last year. One of the ways Corona robbed us was last year, none of us got to come to shul the morning of Pesach and compete. My Seder ended at 1. That's nothing. My Seder ended at 2 a.m. 2 a.m.? We were just getting started at 2 a.m. One of the great universal Jewish practices is to compete how late the Seder ends. We were all robbed of that opportunity last year because of Corona. Because of Corona. So the Seder ends, it feels like it takes a long time, but the truth is it passes very quickly. And if you want to walk away when it passes quickly, having made a kinyan, you want to walk away feeling you were transformed, you acquired something about yourself, you were changed in a permanent fashion, then you need to be prepared. You need to come in prepared. And coming in prepared doesn't just mean the shopping and the cooking and the Pesach lists and ingredients and recipes. It means coming in prepared with the concepts and the thoughts, with the ideas and the ideals of what freedom and liberty are all about. And then he says here in the footnote, which is why I have to put my glasses back on. He says here in the footnote, Kol Yisrael Meschanim Ahitev LePesach. Everybody gets ready for Pesach. You know, you can roll right into Shavuos. I don't mean that you don't have to let your cheesecake cook or you don't have to do whatever preparations make your menu. There are other holidays that take work, but nothing takes the work of Pesach. Nothing takes the advance timeline, strategy, shopping, planning. U'mashkiin l'chvod ha'chag riboy zman b'koach. An enormous amount of energy and time and money and resource goes into Pesach. And says Rav Meir, it's not a coincidence. The Jews feel this incredible connection to the Yontif of Pesach. We feel attached to it. Our memories are formed. The flavors and the smells and the sights and the sounds of Pesach. I can still hear my grandmother chopping the charoses, grinding the maror. I can smell her chicken soup. I can still picture the Seder table. Why are those so ingrained in our memory? Why do we have this emotional connection to the holiday of Pesach? Ki ha'achana hi kli atzum. Because preparing and work and sacrifice and effort make us into a kli kibul, a utensil, that we are ready, lezakos ha'yada bor ha'moed, we are ready to receive the light. Why am I sharing this insight of Rav Itcher Meir? Because I want you to understand that even though tonight is going to be all about making your life easier, consolidating, eliminating the spring cleaning and focusing exclusively on the Pesach preparations. But I want you to know and I want you to understand and I want you to appreciate and I want you to even embrace that all the sweat and tears, all the toil and efforts, even all the sacrifice of money is part of what makes the experience special. It creates the attachment, it creates the emotion, and it leaves us transformed as a result. No pain, no gain. The more we put in, the more we get out, and nothing and nowhere do we put more in on our calendar than the holiday of Pesach. It's what creates the connection. And engage your children in it. There are things that you can buy ready-made. We're living in an absurd time. You can go into a kosher store and buy ready-made salt water. And if that's not a great indictment of us, I don't know what is. That we are too lazy to be able to take a little salt, tap, 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 in the water, a little spoon, mix, 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 and salt water, a fraction of the price, a fraction of the time, a fraction of the schlepping, a little salt in a little water, and voila, you now have salt water. You don't need a bubby to have that recipe. That is the try and true recipe for salt water. Everybody knows it. But you know what your children will grow or gain, your grandchildren, if you engage them and employ them and say, you're in charge of the salt water, you chop the charoses, you make the maror, you set the table, you wash the lettuce, you help get ready. You're not depriving them by making them work. You're in fact giving them a yontif, an emotional, visceral connection that they will take with them for years to come and for a lifetime to come. This is true even in the preparation of the physical realm. Bear with me a couple more minutes because this is important and sets the stage for everything else we're going to talk about. The more you're getting ready and you're understanding why is chametz the archenemy and why is matzah the hero? Or amoy tomen b'Torah, because the light of the holiday, it is buried within the Torah. Shimakor osh Hashem yisbarach ba'olam. We find it inside. And that's why when it comes to Pesach, the Gemara says 30 days before the holiday, we start getting ready. The earlier and the more time and the more preparation and the more resources go into it, the closer we feel, the closer a connection and the more elevated we are as a result. Don't be bitter. The only thing bitter at the table should be bitter herbs, the maror. No bitter people. No room for bitter people. All this Pesach preparation, and as a rabbi, I can tell you, I'm right up there with the Pesach preparation. Selling chametz, answering questions, getting ready, writing drashos, in addition to my long list of responsibilities at home, I'm with you. It's not a pleasant time of the year in terms of the effort that goes in. But either we could become bitter and resentful, in which case our children will want no part of it, or we can be elevated, we can embrace it, we can lean into it, and we can feel privileged. we can feel privileged that we have this great opportunity for this Yontif to be the Am HaNivchar, to be part of a people that Hashem gave us this incredible holiday to celebrate and to mark what freedom is really all about. He expands much more, but I know you want to get into the nitty-gritty, so I'll just read to you one more thing. Vasha atir dos ba'arve psachim heim rabos, even though the effort and the worry and the work is great on Erev Pesach, v'yisrael asukim b'mitzvos, kedai ma'od limtza zman lachanis libeinu l'or agadol hazeh. Find time to also prepare not only your kitchen, but prepare your heart. U'beprat l'layla ha'kadosh sha'oro me'ir b'lev kol yehudi. V'emes mavad atir dos ha'mas yosech gam lefamim b'china shal katnas, b'yamim shakodim Pesach. He says something incredibly, and I wish we had time to really learn this and unpack this much more, but I know you want to get into microwaves and convection ovens and all kinds of fun stuff like that, even though I want to live in the world of Ravitcher Meyer. But he says this incredibly important, and I transition to the next section or stage with this. He says, when we're going to experience a holiday, to experience it most fully, we have to live beyond. Like they went from slavery to freedom, just like they went from being small to growing great, so too they went from being simple to sophisticated, impure to pure. We too go through a very similar experience. We emulate, we imitate, and we go through a very similar idea. And so on Erev Pesach, there's an enormous amount of work, and there's an enormous amount of effort, and we feel like ketanim. We feel like we are superficial and lowly. We're cleaning, and we're washing, and we're shopping, and we're grating, and we're grinding, and we're preparing. But then we set ourselves free. We come to the Seder table not as a shmata, but as royalty, as monarchy, regal. We come to the Seder table not running away from royalty or disowning it, but rather we run to tell Oprah, interview us. I want to be a king and a queen. I want to be a prince and a princess. I want the monarchy. I want royalty. How proud I am to be a Ben Melech or a Bas Melech. We sit at that Seder table as royalty. We experience that freedom firsthand because we have demonstrated, we've lived through it by all that it took to get ready for Pesach and going into Pesach. All of that is point number one. Point number two. This year is unusual. We have Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. This year is an Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. Pesach falls on a Motzei Shabbos on a Saturday night, making Erev Pesach on Shabbos. You must have seen countless articles and speeches and insights and drushes that have come out, but I want to review those halachas and then get into Pesach itself, because in this unusual year, there are some very, very important halachas to point out and not to be lost on. So, I think it happens every 13 years or so that Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. There's a downside. Downside is you got to be ready even earlier. You got to be ready Friday. You lose one day of prep. But you want to know the major upside? You ready for this? The major, major upside is that come Shabbos, you're all ready for Pesach. And now you will do something that you rarely do the other 12 years. You will chop a shluf, a drimmel. You're going to take a great nap Shabbos afternoon. And nobody will be scrambling and rushing. And nobody will be schlepping. And nobody will come to the Seder table exhausted and plotzing. Everybody has an opportunity to come to the Seder table well-rested and well-read, prepared with Divrei Torah, with thoughts, with insights, with conversation, with provocative and challenging questions. We all have Shabbos to get ready for Pesach, and that's a gift. We lose one day on the other end, but it's worth it for the gift. Here is halacha number one. Shlomo Zalman and others point out that you have to be careful when you take a nap on Shabbos Erev Pesach that you, nor when you tell / threaten your children or grandchildren about how important it is for them to take their nap on Erev Pesach, you cannot say you need to take a nap now for the Seder. Because that's called hachana. That's called preparing on Shabbos for after Shabbos. You're not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for after Shabbos. So one cannot connect directly the idea of taking a nap on Shabbos for after Shabbos. One has to take a nap because you want to take the nap for Shabbos. And if it happens to be that you're well rested for after Shabbos, then beautiful, you're well rested for after Shabbos. But you cannot do it. You cannot do it the same. Okay, that is halacha number one. In this unusual year, here are some things to keep in mind. Tainis Bechoros. When is Tainis Bechoros? Bechorim, the firstborn from either the firstborn of a mother or a father, has to fast on Erev Pesach. Now's not the time to get into it. Why? Why do they fast? Maybe it's because they were spared. But if that's the case, if Shlomo Zalman points out, then firstborn daughters should also have to fast. They too were spared from this makkah. So why is it only son? Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a huge chiddush, and he suggests the firstborn fast on Erev Pesach not because they were spared from the 10th plague, but rather they fast because they are reminded and atoning for the terrible misjudgment and mistake that made them not be the ones who function in the Beis HaMikdash. Originally, it was the firstborn who were meant to be the priests in the Beis HaMikdash. But after the firstborn failed miserably, that job, that mission, that position of distinction was taken away from them and given to the Kohanim and Leviim instead. When did the Kohanim, when it was the busiest day of the year, when did they shecht the most? When did they slaughter the most? Erev Pesach. Everybody had to shecht their Korban Pesach. And therefore, on that busiest day of the year, that's when the firstborn look and say, it should have been us. And because they feel remorse and regret, and because they feel and wish they hadn't behaved the way they did, they fast. Now today nobody fasts. Everybody participates in a siyum and they get ready. So when Erev Pesach is Shabbos, we don't fast on Shabbos. And once we're moving a fast, we don't move it to Friday because it could ruin the Shabbos. So the Erev, when is the fast of the firstborn this year, is not on Shabbos or Friday. It's several days even before Pesach. Namely, it occurs on the Thursday before. One can participate in a siyum in order to be yotze the fast instead. When do we do Bedikas Chametz? First of all, if you're not going to be home for Pesach and you're going away, if you're within 30 days of Pesach, you do a Bedikas Chametz, you search for Chametz in your home the night before you leave, but without a bracha. When do we do the search for Chametz if you will be home? You can't do it on a Friday night. Friday night would have been the normal time. That's when we normally do it. Or La'abasa, the night of the 14th of Nisan. Pesach is Saturday night. The night of the 14th, we would have ordinarily done our Bedikas Chametz, our search, but we wouldn't do it on a Friday night because you got to do it with a lit candle. And you got to search. It's not consistent with the theme of rest and tranquility of Shabbos. So when do we do it? We do it on Thursday night. And the blessing of Al Biur Chametz is recited before the search. So the normal bracha of Al Biur Chametz is done on Thursday night. However, the Kol Chamira that's recited afterwards is, it's said, but the one the next morning, we say it again on Shabbos. We'll come back to that in a moment. On Shacharis, on Friday morning. Friday morning is not really Erev Pesach. Remember, Shabbos is Erev Pesach. So normally we omit Mizmor Lesoda because the Korban Toda had Chametz in it. So we don't say it on Erev Pesach. However, when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, it means Friday is not really Erev Pesach, then we do recite Mizmor Lesoda, even though it feels like Erev Pesach, we do. What about burning the chametz? The truth is, you're even allowed to eat chametz on Friday night and Shabbos morning until the last time for chametz, which each community, I know people are listening from different places, so I won't reference a specific time, but the last time for eating chametz on Shabbos morning. You're even allowed to eat chametz Friday night and Shabbos morning until that last time. So burning chametz on Friday, is there a last time? So technically speaking, you could burn chametz the entire day. If you could eat chametz Shabbos morning, you could burn chametz all day Friday. However, our rabbis very prophetically and presciently said, if we allow you to burn chametz all Friday this year, then next year, mistakenly, you'll get confused and say, hey, remember last year we were allowed to burn it the whole day? This year too, we can burn it the whole day. So as to avoid a mistake of burning the chametz at the wrong time in an ordinary year, we burn the chametz by the latest time of burning chametz, even this year, even though it's not really the latest time. We practice and we exhibit as if it's the later time, even though it's not really the latest time, because technically you could burn all day Friday, but we burn by the latest time in order not to get confused in subsequent years. However, the nullification of the chametz, which we'll talk about in a moment, the different methods and ways in which we break up with chametz, in which we end our relationship with chametz, that nullification of chametz with the recitation of the Kol Chamira is postponed until after the chametz set aside on Shabbos morning. So you burn the chametz Friday by what we would normally have as the latest time, but you don't say the Kol Chamira Friday morning, you say it on Shabbos after you part with chametz on Shabbos. Now this is very, very important. Listen carefully. Seder preparations should happen before Shabbos, on Friday. Because normally an Erev Shabbos is when we're scrambling, check the lettuce, grind the maror, prepare the charosas, set the tea. There are certain activities, however, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. And if you leave to do Motzei Shabbos, then your Seder is not going to start until very, very late. And they become complicated to do even on Motzei Shabbos as well. So they should be done in advance. So make a list right now. You ready? Take out your pen and paper. Make a list right now. On Friday, by the time Shabbos begins, you should have roasted your shank bone, you should have roasted your eggs, you should have mixed the salt water, you should grind and mash the ingredients of the charosas, grate the horseradish, check the romaine lettuce, do all of that in advance. If you forgot to make the salt water before Shabbos, a small amount, enough for the first Seder, can be prepared on Saturday night. Salt water for the second Seder, however, you can't do until after the first day of Yontif, till Sunday night. If you forgot to grind the ingredients for charosas or grate the horseradish, you could do it on Motzei Shabbos before the first Seder. and on Sunday night before the second Seder. However, it has to be done in an unusual manner. You can't grind in a normal way. So it's complicated, but more technically, it's going to take a lot of time and everybody's going to be eager and ready and waiting to start the Seder. So I can't reiterate strongly enough that reminder. Prepare on Erev Shabbos. By the end of Friday, when you go into Shabbos, know you are ready. Not only are you ready with salt water and a roasted shank bone, a roasted egg, mixing the salt water and grinding the charoses and the maror and checking the lettuce for bugs, v'chule, v'chule, and so on and so on, but my strong suggestion to you is your Seder table for Friday night, for Motzei Shabbos rather, your Seder table for the first Seder should be set already on Friday. Where will I eat, you ask? Get a folding table, an outdoor table, a kitchen table. Eat elsewhere on Shabbos, and you're going to take care of two things. Number one, you won't have to scramble on Motzei Shabbos to first set your table for the Seder. Number two, you will be able to eat the chametz you will need in order to fulfill Lecha Mishnah Friday night and Shabbos morning without being concerned you're going to compromise where you're going to have the Seder and where you're going to eat on Pesach. So if you have a folding table or an outdoor table or a kitchen table or a coffee table, or someplace else you could have your Shabbos meals, you can set your whole Seder table before Shabbos even begins, and then Motzei Shabbos, Daven Maariv, and you're ready for the first Seder. Everything is prepared, including your table. I don't take for granted. I know not everybody lives in an area or has access to the space that it's so simple in order to be able to do it that way. I understand, but if you do, I strongly and highly suggest that is the best way to do it. Okay, Shabbos meals. What do you do about your Shabbos meals? You have to have Lecha Mishnah Friday night. You have to have Lecha Mishnah Shabbos morning. We have, on Shabbos, we eat two loaves at each meal. Moreover, you have to have three meals, what we call Shalashuddas, Sudash Shlishit, three meals. How are you going to make it all happen this year when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos? So, Friday night, I highly suggest you're having an entire Pesach meal. Eat on paper and plastic. And, in order to be Yotzei HaMotzei, you have a couple of options. Rav Moshe Feinstein said that you can use egg matzah, matzah ashira. Rav Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion that one can use egg matzah on Friday night or even Shabbos morning until the latest time of chametz. Whatever is the latest time of chametz, you could have egg matzah until the latest time of chametz. That was the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. That is not my recommendation, personally. My personal recommendation, not because Chalila, I would disagree. I'm in no position to disagree with Rav Moshe Feinstein. However, I think very practically, have two pitas, or two challah rolls, and leave them aside, and eat them over a designated area that you will not get crumbs anywhere, make the hamotzi on them, and then set them aside, you're done with chametz for that meal. You could do that both Friday night and Shabbos morning, and that little bit of chametz, whether two pitas, whether two challah rolls, that will serve as your hamotzi, as your lecha mishnah, instead of the matzah ashira, which generally we don't like to taste the matzah beforehand. There are all kinds of other creative suggestions. Rav Moshe, Rav Mori Varabi, Rav Shechter has a suggestion that if you fry matzah mavushal, but forget all the other suggestions. I'm telling you what the Goldberg family is going to be doing. Leave two challah rolls or two pita breads. Eat it in an area that will not produce crumbs. Just have the minimum requisite hamotzi Friday night, Shabbos morning. The rest of the meal be Pesach, paper and plastic. On a plastic tablecloth you can conveniently wrap up and throw away. And we'll talk about where you can put it in the garbage in a moment. That's Friday night, and you do that Shabbos morning. Now you have a problem. You have to finish eating in Boca Raton, Florida. The latest time for eating chametz is 10:58 a.m. In Boca Raton, Florida, at least on Montoya Circle, the latest time for eating chametz is 10:58 a.m. Latest time for disposing of chametz is 12:12 p.m., at which time, again, you repeat the Kol Chamira. So, if the latest time is 10:58, you got a problem, because we need to eat three meals. So, first meal Friday night, good to go. I told you what to do. Second meal Shabbos morning, good to go. You save your two pitas, your two challah rolls. You wrap it up, get rid of it, you're good to go. How do you have the third meal? How do you have the third meal? So, I'm going to skip right to the bottom line and not take you through the halachic analysis and process. But, one should make Kiddush, daven early. The minyanim in Boca Raton Synagogue on Pesach morning, on Shabbos morning, are 7 a.m., 7:30, 7:45, and the latest minyan is the Shtibl minyan at 8 a.m. All of the minyanim Shabbos morning are very early because one needs to finish in order to get home with enough time to have two meals. You're going to have Kiddush and Hamotzi, and then you're going to bench. You're going to take a 20-30-minute break, going for a walk, playing a board game, preferably learning some Torah, and then you're going to wash again. When you wash the second time, it is your third meal. That morning, you're going to wash a second time, which becomes the third meal. But again, you need to be done in Boca Raton by 10:58 with whatever you've washed on for that third meal, and then you only have till 12:12 to dispose of the chametz. There are other ways. Some prefer say you have to, in order to be Yotzei Shalashuddas, the third meal, it has to be after Zman Mincha, after Chatzos, it has to be in the afternoon. How do you do that? So then you need to rely on having Shalashuddas. You'll have to rely on being Yotzei with fish or vegetables or some other snack or food, hot dogs, meat, hamburgers, something else in that afternoon, which you'll be yotzei shel shudas on, because by then you can't have matzah. You're not allowed to eat matzah erev Pesach. You can't have chametz. It's after the latest time of having chametz. So that is the way we do it. What do you do with the garbage, the chametz, that you want to throw out? So if it's small enough, you can flush it down the toilet. That is a proper way to dispose of it. You can flush it down the toilet. If it's not, you can put it in the garbage. Wrap it in a plastic bag and put that in your garbage, but your garbage should be at the curb. So on Erev Shabbos, on Friday already, put the garbage at the curb so that on Shabbos morning, when you're taking whatever is left of the chametz that you did not include in your sale, by the way, because we're selling the chametz on Friday. In fact, we're selling the chametz on Friday by the end of the ordinary time that we sell chametz. Even though technically speaking, we could sell chametz the entire Friday because you can still eat chametz the entire Friday and Friday night and Shabbos morning for the same reason that we burn the chametz so that we're not confused in future years. We sell the chametz by that time. The chametz sale will be on condition, we will explain to Junior, that we are selling the chametz, but excluding from the sale whatever chametz that we plan to eat on Shabbos. And whatever is left from that chametz was not sold. Whatever is left from the chametz we didn't eat Friday night or Shabbos morning, put in a garbage bag and take it out to the garbage, which is already at your curb, and then you are mafkir, relinquishing ownership. It's not yours. If somebody driving by wants to rummage through your garbage and eat the rest of the pita or challah roll that you didn't, and in the case of my wife's challah, you don't have to be a poor, desperate person. I tell every one of you, it's worth going through my garbage for her leftover challah. That's how good her challah is. But if somebody were to go through it, they're entirely entitled to take it. It's by their right to take it because we're a mafkir. We declared it ownerless. That is the way to dispose of the chametz. Flush it down the toilet if it's possible. If it's not, you could put it in a plastic garbage bag and you put that plastic garbage bag by the curb in a place where you're relinquishing ownership of it. All of that has to be done by the latest time. So again, Boca Raton, the latest time to eat chametz is 10:58. The latest time for disposing of chametz with the recitation of Chol Chamira is at 12:12. So yes, flush it down the toilet or put it in a garbage bag and put that garbage bag at the garbage, which is at the end of the block. Okay. Shal Shinus, preparations for the Seder, and then Seder night. Okay, now let's get ready. That is what is unusual in this year, because it's Erev Pesach Chalios B'Shabbos. Now let's move over to our usual conversation, and I have a little spoiler alert to you. I hope that I won't disappoint you terribly. I don't have a whole lot to say this year. This is at the point where you might as well listen to last year, and the year before, and the year before. Of course, I will entertain whatever questions that you have, but there's not a whole lot to add, because the same rules and the same principles that enable Pesach to be made easy will be true. And the same hate mail I will get, that I don't know what I'm talking about, will come in, but I stand by it. And I stand by it not because I am worthy of it. Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, Zatzal, wrote a whole kuntras where he promoted this, and great gedolim and great poskim have encouraged the nashim tzidkanios and anashim tzadikim. We are egalitarian when it comes to the Pesach preparation, that one should not do spring cleaning. Don't go crazy. So here's going to be my contention. Are you ready? It's a good thing you're all sitting down. I can't really see because none of you have your Zoom cameras on, which is why I barely go on Zoom anymore. But I assume you're all sitting down, because why in the world would you listen to this standing up? So good you're all sitting down. Here it is. Here's my promise to you. Hi, Penny. Here's my promise to you. My promise to you is listen carefully. Take good notes. Follow what I tell you. And excluding the kitchen, because the kitchen is a lot more preparation, excluding the kitchen, the rest of your home should be half a day to clean to get ready for Pesach. If it's taking you more than half a day, maybe one day maximum, but more than half a day, you're not doing Pesach cleaning, you're doing spring cleaning. Pesach preparation, the Torah Halacha, Hashem Yisbarach, does not want you spending more time than that. How can I make that contention? Where am I coming from? How can I make that promise? Am I out of my mind? Have I ever cleaned for Pesach? Do I know what I'm talking about? Will any of you ever eat in my home again? I'll explain to you exactly why, and I'm happy to share the Mar Makomos, I'm happy to share all of the source sheets, all the Shulchan Aruchs and Mishneh Berurahs. I'm not making this up. This is basic halacha 101. However, we, over the course of time, have somehow confused spring cleaning with Pesach preparation. Pesach preparation, half a day. Spring cleaning could take a lifetime. I'm not interested in the lifetime. I'm interested in getting ready for Pesach, because coming back to what Avichai Meir Morgenstern told us, I want to do the Hachana so we come to the table where the light is coming through our heart. We go from Katniss to Godless. I want to come to the Pesach table well rested and ready to go to have a night of freedom and a night of royalty. So you ready? Fasten up. Here we go. Here we go. The Rambam in his introduction says there are 8 mitzvahs that apply to Pesach today. 3 are positive commandments to destroy the Seor, the Chametz, to eat matzah, and to tell the story of the Sape Yetzias Mitzrayim. 3 positive commandments. 5 negative commandments. You're not allowed to eat chametz from midday and on. You're not allowed to eat chametz all week. You're not allowed to eat even a mixture containing chametz. And lo yirah lo yimatzah, you're not allowed to see, you're not allowed to find. You're not allowed to walk down Publix or Winn-Dixie, the aisles on Pesach. You are. You can see chametz, you just can't see chametz that belongs to you. Also, you can't own chametz even if you don't see it and it's elsewhere. So the prohibition of seeing chametz is seeing chametz that belongs to you. Now, why is chametz the arch enemy? And it's the arch enemy I'm not talking about right now in Hashkafa, although we could for hours and hours, and I would enjoy it much more, and probably you would too. Chametz is the enemy because it's sour, it represents the inflated ego, and chametz is the enemy because it represents the passage of time, procrastination, being lethargic. Chametz is the arch enemy because it represents the Yetzirah and Avodah Zarah. I could share with you hours and hours of beautiful sources about what chametz represents, the worst of within us. But chametz is arch enemy number one in a halachic way as well. And it is in five distinct ways chametz is unique. Number one, we have a specific prohibition not only against eating chametz, but you're also prohibited from eating a mixture that contains chametz. Number two, we have two prohibitions from even owning chametz. Not only are you not allowed to eat it, and not only are you not allowed to benefit from it, you can't even possess it. Number three, we have a positive commandment to get rid of it. When it comes to meat and milk, when it comes to pork and bacon, you're not allowed to eat it. Some cases can't benefit from it, but nowhere does it say you have to destroy it. Chametz, you got to destroy. Number four, it's asar bahana'a. You can't benefit from it. You're not allowed to feed it to your dog. We'll get to, we always do, the pet food cases. Everyone, I get all those emails. My pet, every Jewish pet is like, can't anyone own a Sephardi cat or dog that has a good stomach? Everybody has to have Ashkenazi pets with their bad GI systems. Get a Sephardi pet and you'll be good to go. So every year I get the emails and the text messages and the questions. You don't understand, my rabbi. Rabbi, my cat has a very delicate stomach. My dog has a very specific diet. I know I got the list from the CRC and the Star K and the OU and it's got its list, but my cat, my dog, it can't touch that stuff. Has a very delicate stomach. So Isra Na, you're not allowed to feed your dog chametz. You're not allowed to give chametz as a gift to someone else. You're not allowed to profit from chametz. There are tshuvos. It's permissible. But what if you own stock in Entenmann's Donuts? What if you own stock in Arnold's Bakery bread? Do you have to sell your stock before Pesach as well? So prohibition number four is you're not allowed to benefit. And prohibition number five is why chametz is the arch enemy. Prohibition number five, this combination unique to chametz, is it's asur b'mashu. It is forbidden even in a negligible, minute amount. So what were the five uniquenesses of Pesach, of chametz rather? If I could test you right now, I would. What are they? Number one, we have a specific prohibition alav against eating even mixtures of chametz. Number two, we have two prohibitions against even possessing chametz. Number three, we have a positive commandment to destroy chametz. Number four, we're not allowed to benefit from chametz. And number five, it is asur b'mashu. It is prohibited even in a minor amount. What constitutes chametz? Any food made from the five grains. The Rambam lists the five grains in Perkei Halacha Aleph. It's also in Shulchan Aruch and Tafnun Gimel Halacha Aleph. And they are chita, kusema, sa'ora, shibalashuel, and shibun, wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. These five grains are the grains that could create chametz, and they are also the grains that would make matzah. If you mix them with water and in under 18 minutes bake them, you've got kosher matzah. You can buy spelt matzah and oat matzah and wheat matzah and rye matzah. You can buy it. You might have to mortgage your home to buy 1 pound of it, but you can buy it. But all five grains would constitute and are eligible for to be able to the mitzvah of matzah. The bad news, all five grains mixed with water allowed to sit for 18 minutes unmanipulated also become chametz. Kitnios is not chametz. I just gave a shiur earlier this evening about kitnios and the origins from medieval times, France, Germany, Ashkenaz, Sephardim never adopted it. Kitnios, two reasons were advanced of why we have a prohibition of kitnios. No, can't undo the prohibition of kitnios. Among the top three things that rabbis get bullied about, undoing kitnios, undoing second day of Yontif, and my mother's been petitioning me to cancel Tisha B'Av since I got smicha. I don't have the power to do any of the above. So kitnios is an Ashkenazi practice. We are strict. It's not chametz. Someone old or infirm or not well or a sensitive stomach or a baby or a child or an infant who needs formula, there are exemptions. There are cases that we do allow kitnios. It is not chametz. However, Ashkenazim have adapted a stringency to not consume kitnios because it looks like it can produce foods that look like chametz. Sometimes chametz was mixed in with the kitnios. Different reasons are offered. But remember, it is not chametz. We are just strict in the way that we treat it. So chametz results instantly when the grains are exposed to hot or salted water, or even when they're mixed with cold or lukewarm water, and they're allowed to sit for 18 minutes or more. Chametz is asur b'mashu on Pesach. Why? Rashi tells us, you know why? You know why chametz is asur b'mashu? Chametz is prohibited even in the most minute, negligible amount. You know why? Because lo bedili minei. Because he says, we're used to eating chametz all year round. So I don't come close to bacon or pork all year. I know it's wrong. I don't come close to basar v'chalav, meat and milk all year. I know it's wrong. But chametz I enjoy all year round. And so therefore, it's not going to be forefront of my mind not to eat it on Pesach. And therefore, we have to be even stricter to say it can't even be around b'mashu. It can't even be around in a small amount. It's an iser kares. It is the most severe penalty consequence if one eats chametz. The Rambam gives a different reason. He says, davar sheyesh lo matirin, because chametz is going to be permissible after Pesach. True, you can't have it on Pesach. All you have to do is wait a little bit, and it'll be permissible after. It'll be permissible after Pesach. So we have multiple methods to make sure that we don't have chametz in our home. And the two methods are bittul chametz and bedikas chametz. Bittul chametz is we relinquish our ownership of the chametz. We say chametz, I'll make the same joke I make every year, chametz, it's not a problem in you, it's a problem in me. But we don't have a future. We're going to have to break up in part. We're going our separate ways. And therefore, I no longer own you. We are no longer in a relationship. We relinquish our ownership of it. How do you do that? You fold your arms, you blink your eyes, and you say, chametz, I hereby no longer own you. I declare you ownerless to the world. And that's it. So on a biblical level, make sure that you listen to the end of this sentence. You can't only listen to the beginning. But on a biblical level, if you were to close your eyes, I'll tell you what, you can even do it with your eyes open. On a biblical level, if you declare, I no longer own any of the chametz in my home, then you are good to go. You're done. You don't own chametz and you can't violate the prohibitions of chametz. However, the rabbis were very wise and they understood, what's the problem? The problem is you're going to have a delicious sourdough. You're going to have a delicious donut or croissant. You're going to have a delicious, whatever it is, name your kryptonite, sitting there. And you know what's going to happen on Pesach? You are going to be so hungry and so craving carbs that you're not going to be thinking. And when that donut or that piece of bread is available to you, you're going to reach for it and you're going to bite into it. And then you're going to remember, oh no, I broke up with the chametz. I forgot I don't own it. I'm not allowed to eat it. It'll be too late. You will have eaten something you're prohibited. You're violating an iser kares on. So the rabbi said, that's the mistake. So therefore, we do bedikas chametz. Go search and destroy. Search and destroy mission throughout the entire home. Go search, go find, go eliminate all the chametz. So you'll ask, well, once I'm searching and I'm destroying all the chametz in my home, why do I have to do bittul? Why do I have to relinquish ownership? And the answer is, because what if I looked all over my house, but I missed the one donut under my mattress? And now I encounter it on Pesach, and I crave that donut. So now what am I going to do? So I also need to do bittul. I need to relinquish ownership. Even if I don't find it. What if I have chametz in my house that I didn't find? And now I'm going to have violated having the fact that I owned it. How do I get out of that? So the answer is the combination. Bittul, bedika. We add a few more. We do bittul chametz, bedika and biur, and then we do mechiras chametz. We sell the chametz. How does the selling of chametz work? Not for now. So we do all three. Search and destroy, relinquish ownership, sell the chametz, and by combining those three, by the end, by the time that we enter Pesach, we have no relationship with chametz whatsoever. And there's a lot of work to do. That's why the Mishnah Berurah says we start cleaning at least 30 days before Pesach. Although, when I say there's a lot of work to do, note, I'm going to tell you that it's not that much. The kitchen is the majority of the work. And why do I say that? I'm going to go a little faster than I go most years and just tell you the bottom line about these halachas. And they are the following. You ready? Here we go. Areas and places. This is Shulchan Aruch. If you want to look at it inside, Shulchan Aruch in Tuf Mem Beis Siv Beis. Tuf Lamed Gimel Siv Gimel. Areas and places where chametz is never brought into your house do not need to be cleaned or checked. Let me repeat that. Areas or places where chametz is not brought into your house does not need to be cleaned or checked. So unless you went into the crawl space, unless you climbed a ladder and sat on your ceiling fan while eating a sandwich, unless you pulled your oven out or your refrigerator out and sat behind it while munching on a slice of pizza, you do not need to clean there for Pesach. I just eliminated an enormous amount, not I, the Shulchan Aruch and the Halacha, the code of Jewish law and its true expectation of us, just eliminated an enormous amount of the work that people do that you need not do, when it comes to Pesach. So again, any area where chametz is not ordinarily brought need not be cleaned. Any area where it's not brought need not be cleaned. So appliances that are not going to be accessed or used do not need to be cleaned or checked. They simply need to be put away and sealed. So that means that your toaster oven, you don't need a toothbrush or a toothpick. Your sandwich maker, you don't need a toothbrush or a toothpick. Your food processor or your bread maker, you should not spend 1 second on any of them. All you need is a box on a piece of tape. All you need to do is a place to put them away, put them in a cabinet, and put something across the front of it. So that is rule number two. So rule number one is any area or place where you don't normally bring chametz need not be cleaned or checked. Rule number two is anything that you're not going to access over Pesach need not be cleaned or checked. So any appliance that you're not going to use, any room. Let's say you determine that, you know what, my playroom is so filled with chametz that I'm just going to lock the door to the playroom, I'll sell the chametz in it, and after Pesach we'll buy back the chametz and I will unlock the playroom. You're good to go. Let's say you're not going to do that, but you'll do what my wife, what we just did, which is determine, okay, we're going to take a box and any toy which is complicated to clean or I think might have chametz in it, I throw it in the box. So you know what? They're going to be free from too many choices on Pesach. We're going to consolidate the options, which is really going to set our children and grandchildren free to have less to play with, and they'll enjoy it much more. So any complicated toy is going to go in a box with a piece of tape. We're going to put it away. And now my playroom is almost ready to go. So that was rule number two. Anything that will not be accessed or used on Pesach need not be cleaned or checked. It simply needs to be put away. My favorite job in the kitchen, everybody knows. Give me that tape, removable tape. You don't want to destroy the cabinets. But I love walking around the kitchen with instructions of what we are not using. Close off that cabinet, that cabinet, that cabinet, that cabinet, that cabinet. 70% of the kitchen's ready to go. You don't have to. If it's a cabinet you're not using on Pesach, don't empty it. Don't wipe it down. Don't wash it down. Don't clean it. Tape is your new best friend. Removable tape is your absolute new best friend. I saw now they're selling next to the salt water. Somebody sent me a picture. They're selling stickers that say sold to a goy, chametz, don't go in. You can now even buy. But again, why pay for the markup? Just go to Home Depot and buy, or anywhere else, and buy disposable tape, or order on Amazon like you do everything else these days. So buy disposable tape, and your favorite part of the day of Erev Pesach, or when you're cleaning, rather, is walk around any room, any dresser, any closet, any armoire, any pantry, any appliance, anything that you're not going to go into on Pesach need not be cleaned or checked. Simply put it away and seal. Number three, any food that is not categorized as edible, meaning a dog would not eat it, is not considered chametz. There's no need to check for crumbs that are less than a kazayas if they're dirty or soiled and wouldn't be edible to a human. Mishnah Berurah, Taf Mem Beis, Sif Lamed Gimel. I didn't make any of this up, but all in Shulchan Aruch Ramah and the Mishnah Berurah. So that means to say, even though we said chametz is also b'mashahu, chametz is also even in the most smallest minute amount, negligible amount, that's true if the last crumb of my wife's amazing challah, because it's edible. Edible chametz is prohibited even in the most minute amount. But once it's rendered inedible, then inedible is defined as less than a kazayas and not edible to a human, or even more than a kazayas, not edible to a dog. Once it is inedible by those standards, it's not called chametz anymore. So whatever is underneath your stove or behind your refrigerator, first of all, you don't ever go back there to eat chametz. Second of all, you're not going back there on Pesach. Third of all, whatever is there is inedible and therefore is not a problem. So I will tell you what I say every time. Practically speaking, any cabinet, closet, room that will not be entered on Pesach can simply be closed with a piece of tape across the door and chametz sold. Any kitchen cabinet, any drawer, any cupboard that will not be used on Pesach need not be cleaned, just needs to be taped shut. Any appliance, food processor, sandwich maker, mixer, bread machine that will not be used need not be cleaned whatsoever, needs to be put away in a sealed place, and whatever chametz that's in it will be sold for Pesach. What happened? At some point in Jewish history, Pesach preparation was substituted with spring cleaning. If you're moving your refrigerator, your oven, or any heavy appliance, you're doing spring cleaning, not Pesach. If you're climbing on a ladder to clean a ceiling fan, or to take a toothpick to a toaster or a food processor, or you're scrubbing grout with a toothbrush, or you're emptying and wiping dressers, closets, linen pantries, crawl spaces, shaking out books that haven't been opened in years, you're doing spring cleaning, not Pesach cleaning. If you're doing any of those things, feel free to do them in August, September. Feel free to do them November, December. Don't do them in March. Don't do them and then blame Chazal and Hashem for your being exhausted. Halacha demands that we go room to room confirming there's no chametz that's larger than 30 grams and edible. And that can be accomplished, you ready for this? In a few hours at most. It can be accomplished in a few hours. Again, I'm not talking about cleaning and kosher in the kitchen, which takes a little bit longer. But if you walk around with my favorite tape, and if you really say that areas where chametz didn't go, you do not need to clean, and you recognize that areas that you're not going to access on Pesach need not be cleaned, and you realize that areas that don't have chametz, which is edible, need not be cleaned, then it should take a few hours. This substitution of spring cleaning for Pesach preparation comes at a great cost. It comes at a great cost. It makes us miserable, and we project and transfer that misery to the next generation, and instead of entering Pesach excited and enthusiastic and prepared with Divrei Torah, we enter resentful and negative and miserable, and that's no way to enter Pesach. Again, the only thing bitter at the Seder table should be the herbs, not any of the people. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, she'akol ni'eved baro. So, a few hours at most, not 5 days to Pesach cleaning. I'm going to write my own book, not 5 days, 5 hours to Pesach cleaning, and you are ready to go if you follow those simple rules I told you. Anything you're not going to access, put away and seal. Any place you're not going to go into, close off. Any place you never bring chametz into to begin with. If you're climbing a ladder, you're not getting ready for Pesach. If you're on your hands and knees, you're not getting ready for Pesach. If you're carrying a heavy appliance or a dresser, you are not getting ready for Pesach. You are making a terrible mistake. A terrible mistake. And so the Shulchan Aruch writes, Chayav Adam Leo Sameach V'Tov Lev B'Moed. A person has to be overjoyed and happy going into the holiday. And Mishnah Berurah is quick to add that being happy in the holiday is a mitzvah d'oraisa and applies equally to men and women. To sacrifice or compromise that happiness because you're doing spring cleaning instead of Pesach, you're making a terrible, terrible, and tragic mistake for you and for the generations to come that are watching and that are absorbing your attitude. And so do it with love. Realize, as we saw the piece from Avichai Meir, that Hachana is creating that emotional connection, that relationship. Embrace and lean in and do it with love. It is creating these emotional connection. The sights, the flavors, the sounds, the smells, the tastes of Erev Pesach, of getting ready for Pesach. Don't take on extra and that which we're not obligated to do. I have Mar Makomas if you want to look at. Well, everything I told you comes from the Shulchan Aruch. Everything I told you comes from. So let's talk about cleaning your house and then we'll get to the kitchen. So cleaning the house now, you go room to room. When you go through the closet, that clothing, does chametz normally get put into the pockets? Is chametz going into the dresser? Is chametz going into that jacket or that luggage? If chametz could get there, then you have to check it. Legitimately, you have to check it. I'm not telling anyone to take the easy way out. I'm telling you to take the halachic way out. Now, the Mishnah Berurah does tell us that if you have children at home, small children, to a certain degree, all bets are off. Because when there are small children at home, there's no place in the home that small children can't get to. So there is an element of that being true. But by the same token, we do know that there are places in our house where chametz is not taken. We know that arguably the majority of many of our homes, we never take or schlep chametz in there. So if there's an area where chametz is never brought into, you need not check it, clean it, or be prepared for it. Okay? So as you're going room to room, clothing, dressers, you don't need to empty everything automatically and wipe it down and refold the clothing and separate what you're giving to Goodwill or you're donating. That's all spring cleaning. If chametz never goes into that dresser drawer, if chametz never goes into that nightstand, if chametz never goes behind that bed, then you need not check. If you think it might, then you need to check legitimately. You cannot take the easy way out or cop out. Takes my bedikas chametz in my house takes a very long time. Takes a couple hours, over an hour for sure, because we are very careful. We legitimately go room to room. Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of young children. I'm not suggesting taking an easy way out, but I'm also telling you that you do not need to add work. Going through closets, peripherally looking, making sure, ensuring there's no chametz there, you are good to go. So that is the rest of the house. Any questions you have, please put in the chat. Please submit. I'm happy to address. I'm happy to respond to. Let's get to the kitchen now. Let's get to the kashering of the kitchen. Let's go area by area of the kitchen. Where should we start? The refrigerator, that's the easiest. The refrigerator should be cleaned well. The refrigerator shelves should be wiped down. The refrigerator shelves should preferably be covered, but you need not be neurotic about it. The covering is not because there can actually be a transfer of taste. There cannot be a transfer of taste in a cold refrigerator. However, this is the Minhag Yisrael, is to put down something on those refrigerator shelves, perhaps just to remind us that it is Pesach, so you don't have to cover every inch or millimeter of the refrigerator shelf, but the custom is to put something down. We also, if you have a freezer where there is ice that has, what's the word I'm looking for? You should defrost, it's frosted. Defrost the freezer, because there can be chametz mixed into the frost with the freezer. Clean not only the refrigerator carefully and well, but the accordion seal around it, the rubber accordion seal, should be cleaned carefully around it as well. And now your refrigerator is good to go. Your ice maker, if you clean it well, can be used on Pesach. You are good to go. That is the refrigerator. See how easy that was? What about your sink? So the way kashering works is kibolo kach polto. The way that food is absorbed is the way it's purged. So if the transfer of the food came through heat, then the way you get it out is through heat. If it came through liquid, the way you get it out is liquid. If it was transferred through steam, then the way to remove it, the way to purge it, eliminate it, is through steam. That principle, kibolo kach polto, that the way it's transferred is the way that it's purged, is all you need to know for the world of kashering. So for example, the microwave. How does taste get into the walls of the microwave? Why can't you just scrub down your microwave well and then you're good to go? Why do you also have to kosher it? The answer is through the medium of steam, food goes from the particle in the microwave into the walls of the microwave. And if now on Pesach you use that microwave and it produces steam, it can take the taste out of the walls of the microwave and impart it into the food that you're eating and potentially be transferring the taste of chametz. So since the entire transfer of taste happens through steam, that's also how we purge it of that taste. How do we purge it of that taste? So clean your microwave well, clean out the filter, clean out every nook and cranny, take out the glass table, glass Ashkenazim. Sephardim hold glass doesn't even need to be kashered for Pesach. Ashkenazim hold glass cannot be kashered for Pesach. So take the glass out of the microwave, the glass tray out of the microwave. You cannot kasher glass. And the way to kasher a microwave is clean it well and then leave it 24 hours. Why do we leave it 24 hours? Because we have a principle called the Davar Pogim. Strictly speaking, every taste that is absorbed into a utensil is considered to be a negative taste. It's a davar pogum. It is considered to be a negative taste, a stale taste, after 24 hours. 24 hours after that food is absorbed, the taste is absorbed into the wall of the utensil, it's no longer viable. It's considered to be stale and no longer viable. So why can't I just take a non-kosher utensil, wait 24 hours, and then use it? I'll tell you a little secret. Biblically speaking, you can. Mida oraisa, you would be allowed to. Mida oraisa, it would be good enough. However, the rabbis came along and they said, you're going to get confused between the 24 hours. What happens if you cook with that utensil 23 and a half hours later? Now you got a big problem. So in order to be strict, we don't rely on the 24 hours, and we have separate meat and separate dairy, separate kosher, separate non-kosher, separate Pesach, and separate chametz. We don't rely on the 24 hours. However, we invoke the 24-hour rule as one of the methods of kashering. So whenever we kasher, certainly, if we're doing Hagala or Libun Kal, we wait 24 hours. So when you're going to kasher your microwave, kasher your sink, or kasher your countertops, or kasher your regular oven, not a self-clean oven, I'll elaborate more in a moment. When you're going to kasher any of these things, first you wait 24 hours. Clean it well, wait 24 hours, kasher. That is the magic formula. So you clean your microwave well, and then you remove the glass tray, clean it well, wait 24 hours, and now you're ready to kasher. How do you kasher? With steam. How do you kasher it with steam? Easily. You take a microwave safe bowl, cup, utensil, you fill it with water, and you run it in the microwave long enough that it produces steam. 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15 minutes, however long. You then fill it again with water. You move it to another spot because you have to kasher the spot where the bowl was originally. You move it to another spot within the microwave, and then you make it produce steam yet again. Now you've kashered your microwave. Use special care and caution when you open the microwave. Boiling water in a microwave can be challenging. I've never seen it, but I've read when you open the door of the microwave, it can be a problem. So open the door of the microwave very carefully after you've boiled water inside of it, or let it cool before you open the door of the microwave. But that is the way that we kosher the microwave. So a microwave is koshered by cleaning well, wait 24 hours, remove the glass table, and then leave water in it long enough to produce steam, move it to another place so that it koshers the place where that first bowl was. Aliza asks, my microwave is also a convection oven. How do we kosher it? And the answer is you kosher a convection oven, a microwave convection oven, the same way you do an oven. So let's talk about how you kosher an oven. You kosher an oven, similarly, you clean it well, clean it very well, and then you wait 24 hours. We're not talking about a self-clean oven, we're talking about a regular oven. Clean the oven well, and then wait 24 hours, and then run the oven on the highest setting for an hour. That's what kashers the oven. So clean it well, wait 24 hours, run it on the highest setting for an hour, and that is the same way you kasher a convection oven. The glass should be removed from it, but the convection oven is kashered like an oven, not like a microwave, and that is the way it's done. When you talk about, Margo's asking about using how do you boil the water in the microwave? You can do it, I think something disposable is the easiest, a styrofoam cup or bowl, but you can use either a Pesach or non-Pesach cup, as long as it's been 24 hours, to put the water in, but a disposable utensil is the easiest way to do it. Microwave safe cup or bowl with enough water to produce steam to kasher the microwave, move it to a second spot, do it again. Convection oven is like an oven. Clean it well, wait 24 hours, highest setting for an hour. Self-clean oven, you do not need to wait. Why do you not need to wait? You do not need to wait because a convection oven is a self-clean oven is libun chamur. The heat of a convection oven is incredibly, incredibly hot. It will incinerate. I mention every year, if you take a wood spoon and leave it inside a self-clean oven and run the self-clean oven, you will find a pile of ash afterwards on the floor. One of the ways we kosher are grates, although they can change color, so I'll give you a warning. You should kosher grates on top of a stove in a self-clean oven, but it can often change the colors. I find it the easy way. We have gas, A lot of people in Florida have electric or have glass top, we'll talk about. We happen to have gas. And we have, what do they call it? Like a continuous rack. It's not four separate distinct racks, but it's a continuous one. So we find it easiest to just insert them in the oven, run the self-clean cycle on the oven, and it kashers both the oven and the grates of the stove top. But I caution you, it can make them change colors. So that is how you kasher a oven and a self-clean oven. That's how you kasher, we talked about, microwave, convection oven, and the refrigerator. Let's get to sinks. Sinks, how do you kasher a sink? It depends on the material. So we talk about kabolo kachpolto, that you kasher in the same way the food got there to begin with. How would food taste get imparted into your sink? It's not going to be cooked there. You don't cook in a sink. It's going to get there through what's called irui. You're going to have some chametz food item, and you're going to pour it into the sink, and the taste will get transferred through the process of pouring. Well, the same is true. If that's the way the taste got there to begin with, then that is also the way that we get the taste out. How do you get the taste out? By kabolo kachpolto, irui kli rishon. Boil water, and then you take the boiled water, and you pour it over the surface of the sink. Clean the sink well. Wait 24 hours. This gets complicated, particularly this year, if you're going to be using that sink on the Shabbos of Erev Pesach. No, I'm sorry. Not the Shabbos of Erev Pesach, you'll be in big trouble. Next Shabbos. We'll get to the other way to kasher the grates in a moment. So your sink, clean it well, wait 24 hours, and then you kasher it by pouring the boiling water. Not every material is capable of being kashered. So stainless steel can be kashered, for example. Formica, according to most poskim, can be kashered. But ceramic cannot be kashered. So I want to bring your attention to a couple of resources. Your best friend is the CRC Pesach Guide. See it right here? CRC Pesach Guide. CRC, Rav Fishbein, my dear friend, and my friends at the CRC do a phenomenal job. 90% of the time when you text or ask me a question, I'm going to the CRC app or the CRC Pesach Guide. You can save both of us time and go right there yourself if you like. But the Pesach Guide is fantastic. Download the CRC app on your phone. Searchable. It's easily in categories. It has lists of hachsherim. It is your new best friend. CRC Kosher, it is an app on the phone, the Chicago Rabbinical Council. Or the Pesach Guide is incredible information. Our dear friends at the OU produce the OU Passover Guide. Pesach Guide, Passover Guide. Also, really tremendous information. Star K has a great guide, particularly medicine and cosmetics. Star K, those are the three guides I highly recommend. CRC, OU, Star K. There are other guides that are put out. There are other guides that are put out by names of people who are no longer among the living. Zatzal, wonderful, enormous Talmidei Chachamim. I don't recommend those guides. I highly recommend in that order the CRC guide, the OU guide, and the Star K guide. CRC is really very intuitive, user-friendly, has many, many of the answers. I highly recommend it. All of them, the CRC in particular, has a great, beautiful, if you want to print it out in color, beautiful, color-coded. I'm holding it upside down, but color-coded. Green means go, red means stop, but it has a list of all the different countertop or sink type of materials, whether they can be kashered with comments on them. What can be kashered, what can't be kashered, utensils that can be kashered or can't be kashered. Fantastic. So check it out there. I'm just telling you the methodology, but go to the CRC guide. You can download it. It's free. They give this enormous resource to the community for free, 100% free. It's tremendous. Sorry about that. Tremendous, tremendous, tremendous. So there's a list of which sink materials can and which can't. Same is true with your counter. Clean your counter well and leave it for 24 hours and then pour boiling water on it. If it has scratches in it, the chametz can get in. You have to cover those with tape or spray something caustic in it in order to destroy so it's not roi l'achil. It's no longer considered edible. That is countertops. Backsplashes should also be covered or koshered. Koshered with pouring boiling water or covered with material because a hot pot can touch a backsplash. One has to be careful that is also something which is kashered. Every year I get asked about steam. I saw a great video that was put out, maybe by the CRC, that showed that the steamers that we have, in order to kasher, you need water, not steam, you need water, and the water has to be Yatzi Lettuce Bow, 212 degrees. Most steamers that you're going to get, by the time the water condensates into the vapor, the steam is water, it is less than Yatzi Lettuce Bow, yes, less than that requisite amount. And so steamers, there are types of steamers. They're very expensive. They're industrial type steamers. They're complicated. They're time consuming. I do not recommend trying to go the steamer route. It's possible, but I do not recommend it. Either boil water and be very careful. Now, when you kasher with boiling water, whether it's your sink or your countertop, you cannot simply splash it but you have to walk with the water over the surface. You have to take the water around the surface of the sink. You have to walk with the water along the surface of the countertop. You can't simply throw it. That's not called Iroi Kli Rishon. Then, by the end of the countertop, all it's getting is the leftovers, the cold water of the leftovers from the original splash. So you've got to walk with the water as you release it. Have someone behind you with towels. Be wearing rubber gloves. Make sure you're wearing closed shoes. All of that I share with you, having learned the hard way. Be very, very careful and cautious when you are kashering with boiling water. We did a new kitchen several years ago after we had a leak, and from then on my wife decided she was not risking the cabinets getting destroyed. We cover. And I will tell you that I love the fact that we cover our countertops, because not only is it more user-friendly to make it prepared for Pesach, but the kitchen has a different look. You walk into the kitchen and you know it's Pesach time. I love that. Byproduct of doing it. That's the way it was in my house growing up, and that's true now as well. You could use a two kettle to pour the water, but the Iroi Kli Rishon, the water has to be Mala Ababuos. For the water to kasher, it has to be bubbling. Mala Ababuos is an onomatopoeia. It's a word that sounds like what it is. The water has to be bubbling over. So you boil water in whatever vessel you want. You can use either a Pesach pot, or you could use a chametz pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours to boil the water. And then you take that boiling, really bubbling, boiling water, and that's what you use to kasher your sink, assuming it's a material eligible to be kashered, to kasher your countertop, assuming it's a material which is eligible to be kashered. When kashering your sink, by the way, your faucet, a lot of the faucets pull out. Be careful to pull it out and pour the boiling water directly on the faucet as well, because when you were washing dishes, the steam of chametz could have gone up and hit the faucet. And the same can be true then with your Pesach dishes. So you should kasher the faucet as well, not just the inside of the sink, but the faucet with a pot, which is Mala Ababuos, with water that is bubbling over. So that covers the sink. For the materials for the sink and the materials of countertops, I highly recommend and refer you to the CRC guide. Let me just look at the questions here and catch my breath to see what we're missing. Can you kasher the oven before you kasher the stovetop? Yes, you can. Need not be the stovetop first. Do you need to cover closet shelves or kitchen drawers where open food is not intentionally brought? No, as long as they're clean, wiped down, you do not technically need to line them. How would you kasher the stovetop grates? Okay, we can move over to the stovetop in one second. Let's move over to the stovetop. So the way you kasher the stovetop is the following. It depends how your stovetop works. If your stovetop is electric, which meant that there's metal area and then there's metal coils and they glow when they're hot, then the way you kasher is you cover all the metal in between, and the four coils you run on high until they glow. That's how you kasher the electric stovetop. So an electric stovetop, you cover with tinfoil, cover well all the catch area, all the metal area between the four grates before the four coils. And the four coils, don't do all four at once. You'll melt something, it's too much heat. But one or two at a time, you kasher by leaving them on high until they glow. And when they glow, you know they are kashered. Okay, so that is the stovetop, electric stovetop. Now we move over to the glass stovetop. A glass stovetop, which became very, very popular, and kashrus agencies took several years to get this right. They were coming out different years with different suggestions. We're proud of BRS, that we hope and we think we got it right to begin with. By the way, quick commercial. If you are not a member of BRS and you're enjoying this, it's not too late to join our global campaign. We are trying to bring the message of how to make Pesach easy wherever you are. What is it worth to you to have saved from 5 days to 5 hours? What is it worth to you to cut from spring cleaning to Pesach cleaning? brsonline.org/global. brsonline.org/global. Be part of our global community. It has certain benefits. For as little as $1, show your Hakaras HaTov. Our campaign is not yet done. We would love to have you as part of our global community. If you're enjoying this or any of our classes, if they help or enrich your lives in any way, please be partners with us, brsonline.org/global. If you're not a BRS member, we would love to have your partnership. Okay, so what were we talking about? Stovetops, glass top stoves. So the glass top stove is kasher the following. Clean it well, leave 24 hours. We said you can't kasher glass. It's true, Ashkenazim Paskin, you can't kasher glass. But does that mean you can't use your stovetop at all? No, it does not mean that. What you do is the following. What you do is you clean it well and you leave it for 24 hours. You leave the four, again, coils on high until they glow red within the glass. That's how you kasher that area itself. When they all cool, leave one of them, use one of them to boil water and pour that across the surface of the glass. And then the most important part is, on Pesach itself, don't put anything on the glass in between the area of the burners. Only put things down, the pots, for example, on the four burners. Don't put on the area in between the burners. Okay, so that is electric stovetop, and that is the glass top stove. Moving over to the gas stove and the grates. Rav Moshe says you can turn a burner on high, and the same way that the stove absorbs is how it's purged. So by leaving the burner on high for 10, 15 minutes, you kasher each one. Don't do all four at once, or six, or eight, or however many you're showing off that you have in your kitchen. Do only a couple at a time from a safety standpoint, but leave the burner on high, and that's how you kasher the burner. Rav Moshe has that tshuva in the context of, do you have to designate burners as milchiks and fleishiks? And he says, no. When the burner is on high, you've kashered the burner, and therefore you don't have to designate as milchiks and fleishiks. That is how you kasher the gas stove. So you can either take the grate and put it in your self-clean oven, or you could kasher the grate right on top of your stove by leaving it on high. But a gas also, all the area underneath the grates and the area in between the grates should be covered. So if you have an electric stovetop, you have to cover with tinfoil all the area in between. If you have a gas stovetop, you have to cover with tinfoil all the area in between. If you have a glass stovetop, don't cover anything or you'll break your glass stovetop. Kasher the four corners, and then don't put anything in between. Preferably pour boiling water across the surface of the glass as well, but not while the four are hot. Okay, that's stovetops. So we did sinks, stovetops, refrigerators, ovens. What about a warming drawer? Is there a way to kasher a warming drawer? So the Star K, Baruch Hashem, has a way to kasher a warming drawer. You can light a chafing dish, a Sterno can in the warming drawer. Leave it open a little bit because you don't want it to combust. Leave the door of the warming drawer slightly ajar so there'll be enough airflow for combustion. Allow the can to burn for 2 hours. So clean it well, leave 24 hours, and then burn a Sterno in the warming drawer with it open a little bit. If you have a warming drawer, you know that after the CRC app, the warming drawer is your other best friend. It is a great way to warm food on Shabbos and Yontif. And so if you want to kosher the warming drawer, that is how you kosher the warming drawer. Microwave, sink, warming drawer, counters, refrigerator, regular oven, convection oven, stove tops, Keurig. How do you kosher a Keurig maker? So the OU for years has been telling us you can clean it well, leave 24 hours, and then run a kosher for Pesach K-cup through a Keurig cycle, and your Keurig is now ready to go for Pesach. That is how you kasher a Keurig for Pesach. Somebody asked, can you kasher a... I'm trying to catch up here. The OU has a list of the Keurig cups that are good, apparently. Thank you. The OU has a list of the K-cups that are good for koshering. Here you go. They have this on page 24 if you have the OU guide. Coffee maker must be clean while not used 24 hours. Remove K-cup holder. Perform Haggalah or Iruy on the K-cup holder. Run a kosher for Pesach K-cup in the machine, and that will kosher it. Okay. What about dishwasher? Ooh, someone asked about a dishwasher. So the OU guide said, koshering a dishwasher is complicated. It should only be done in consultation with a halachic authority. That's a pretty big cop-out. So I'll tell you the answer of a dishwasher. The answer of the dishwasher is, it can be done, but I don't recommend it. We paskin, you can kosher hard plastic. So certainly if your dishwasher is stainless steel, it can be koshered. Even if your dishwasher is hard plastic, it can be koshered. We paskin, it can be koshered. But it's not recommended. Why? Because in the bottom of the dishwasher are filters and traps and gaskets and rubber tubes. And it is very complicated. A lot of places the chametz could get mixed in. So it is highly recommended not to kosher the dishwasher. If you want to use the racks of the dishwasher to dry dishes, people sometimes do that. But even that's not necessarily recommended. But you can, according to many poskin, you can kosher a dishwasher. If you are following the poskim who allow it, then you clean the bottom extremely well, filter the area of the traps, leave it for 24 hours, and you run three consecutive cycles, no soap, no detergent. You run three consecutive cycles in a row for those who believe that you can, but otherwise we try to discourage the koshering of a dishwasher. What else? Hot water urn in the water cooler. What is the halach of the hot water urn? An urn that's only used for heating water, run hot water through the water tap for 10 seconds while pouring boiling water from a kettle over the watering tap. So let's say all you do is fill a water cup with hot water, and then you make your coffee, or then you make your oatmeal, then you make whatever it is. So no chametz ever actually comes in contact with the tap. You don't wash the hot water urn with chametz. Then the way to kasher it is, as I just said, pour boiling water over the tap and let boiling water come out of the tap for 10 seconds. If the urn is also used to warm food, put it away for the holiday and get a Pesach version of that urn. Water cooler. Pour boiling water over the tap and replace the water bottle. I don't really understand, and never did, why you have to replace the water bottle. I don't think this chametz in the water bottle. That sounds like a stringency to me. But pour boiling water over the tap in case boiling water was coming out of the tap into your oatmeal or into some substance which was chametz. That is your water cooler, your urn, your oven, dishwasher, sink, microwave, Kerig maker, what did we leave out? Had a kasha silverware pots. First of all, if you live in Boca Raton, we, thanks to the ORB and my dear friend Rabbi Feligolstadt, the phenomenal, wonderful head of the ORB will be having kashering on the Sunday before Pesach, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. in the parking lot of Boca Raton Synagogue. You can bring the utensils within reason, your utensils, silverware that you'd like to kasher, kiddush cups that you'd like to kasher, and that will be available in the shul parking lot, 10:30 to 12:30 on the Sunday of Erev Pesach. Feel free to come, and a huge thank you to Rabbi Feigelstock and the ORB for making that available. Electric mixers, not recommended to kasher, very complicated. Barbecue grills, very complicated. You need a blowtorch, not simple. It's not a matter of only kashering the grates, but food can get caked and baked in underneath and all around. So I don't recommend. Get a George Foreman, get a grill pan for on top of the stove, get a Pesach mini barbecue for every Chol HaMoed, but I don't recommend it. Can Nespresso coffee maker be kashered? I believe the same way as the Kerrig. I'm not possible. The OU only talks about the Kerrig because I know the Nespresso snobs think that the Kerrig is like, you might as well just drink instant coffee. But I'm not sure about the Nespresso. I think it's the same as the Kerrig. But if you remind me, Deborah, please God, I will look into it. Okay, did I miss any of the questions with the kitchen utensils for koshering? Let me just look at the chat for a moment. Bear with me. Kosher the oven, stovetop, faucet, Kerrig, covered, oven grates, pot. If the pot's larger than the burner on the glass top stove, yes, it is okay, because that's why we are going to pour the boiling water over the rest of the surface of the glass to cover our basis in case the pot circumference is larger than the burner circumference. Yeah. Glass top. Plata. Warming drawer. We talked about Shabbos hot plate. What about koshering a Shabbos hot plate? We didn't get to that. Very good. Shabbos hot plate. Clean well. Leave 24 hours. Plug in and leave on for an hour. And then cover it and you can use it on Pesach. So if you have a plata or hot plate, you clean well. Leave 24 hours. Plug it in and leave it on for an hour. And then cover it. And you are good to go to be able to use it on Pesach. Then you are good to go. Okay, what about induction stovetop I'm being asked about? I remember looking this up last year. Does anyone remember what I answered last year about the induction stovetop? Let me see if I can find what I answered. Complicated, the exchange of electricity. Here it is. Induction stovetop. Before kashering an induction cooktop, it has to be thoroughly cleaned, then left unused for 24 hours. Cooktop then requires iroi roschen. You pour boiling water over the top of it. But note that you can't use the induction cooktop on Shabbos or Yontif. Cannot be used on Shabbos or Yontif. But for Chol HaMoed, an induction cooktop can be kashered. Clean well, leave 24 hours, and then pour boiling water over the surface of the induction cooktop. Okay. Checking the chats here. We're in several places. I don't think I missed anything. The Insta hot water can be kashered by pouring boiling water over the surface of it. Oh, Nespresso machine. Thank you to Rabbi Feigelstock, who is, I'm sure, many better things to do than listening to this, but it's helping me in real time. In fact, Rabbi Feigelstock, feel free to come on and take over. Canada's Kosher Certifier, the MK, has 10 simple steps for koshering your Nespresso machine for Pesach. Clean the outside of the machine using a new sponge or cleaning agent. Make sure there's no pot in the machine. Fill the water canister. Turn the machine on. Use the Nespresso descaling kit. Run a cycle without a pot until the water comes out as clear. Do not use the machine 24 hours. After being left out of use 24 hours, fill the canister, turn the machine on, kosher the machine by running a cycle without a pod once again. I know I read those 10 steps quickly, but if you Google 10 simple steps for koshering an Nespresso machine, you will find it. It's from 3 years ago, but Rabbi Feigelstock says it is still true today, so you can rely on that. Okay, so even a hot plate that was used all year for Shabbos, you can follow what I said. Clean it well, leave 24 hours. Plug it in, leave it on the highest setting for an hour, and then cover it with tin foil, and you are ready to go. So, Larry, enjoy your coffee. Simon, enjoy your hot plate. And I think we have covered the different utensils of the kitchen. Let me go back on these different things and check and catch up. Nespresso, induction top. When you leave your home early for Pesach, do you have to check every room? No. If you're leaving for Pesach and you're not going to be home on Pesach at all, you don't have to clean or check anything. Sell the chametz in your home. Do a bedikas chametz the night before you leave without a bracha, but it's not even a real bedika because you don't really have to clean. If you're leaving Pesach, you don't have to clean or prepare anything. I think that takes care of the kitchen. Did we leave anything else out? Feel free to weigh in. So between koshering your kitchen and getting your house ready, we're talking about a day and a half and you're ready to go. Remember, tape is your best friend. You're taping up every cabinet, every utensil, every appliance that you're not going to be using, and you are good to go. Anything that you're worried I didn't cover, CRC Guide and WhatsApp are phenomenal, as are the OU and the Star K, and Canada, as we see, also has. Can you drink more than 4 cups of wine? By my favorite wine drinker there is. You can. In fact, over 2 nights, you're going to be drinking 8, and the lunches in between, you're going to have, but you have to drink always responsibly and in moderation. And looking forward, my brother, to drinking together with you. Okay, Seder preparations we talked about have to be on Friday. Do not forget. Don't wait till Motzei Shabbos, and then you'll delay your Seder start. So we talked about that. Sous vide machine. Can you kasher a sous vide machine? That is a good question. I don't believe I saw any of them talking about it. Rabbi Feigelstock, if you're still with us, feel free to weigh in on the kashering of a sous vide to be able to prepare your steak to melt in your mouth when you make it after it sits in the sous vide. Delicious. Very delicious. I'm not sure. Let's move over to the area of cosmetics and ingredients. First of all, again, the CRC app, I know I'm endorsing it. I'm not on the CRC payroll, I promise you. But it is a great app, and it has a shopping guide. And when you go to the supermarket and you want to know what needs to be kosher for Pesach, before, anyone's welcome to text me. I'm happy to answer anything. But again, this is where I'm going to go to look, so you might as well cut out the step and look directly yourself. They have a shopping guide. Beautiful, color-coded. You see that? Beautiful color-coded shopping guide. Magnificent. And it will tell you with each product, does it need to be kosher for Pesach, or you could buy it without it being kosher for Pesach, or it depends on its ingredients. It tells you everything. So, for example, what do you want to know? Styrofoam doesn't need to be kosher for Pesach. Styrofoam is fine without it. Sugar, brown sugar and confectionery sugar need to be kosher for Pesach. Pure white cane sugar without additives is acceptable even without being kosher for Pesach. What else do you want to know about? Olive oil, extra virgin, good to go. Other types, including extra light, need to be kosher for Pesach. CRC shopping guide, it is searchable. So when you go to the supermarket and you have a question, it is searchable. Mayonnaise, medicine, milk, mineral oil, popcorn, iskitnios, whatever you want to know. Which nuts? Almonds. Everybody always asks me not almonds. Walnuts. They want to know about walnuts for the charosas. Everybody already wants to know. So great shopping guide. Check out the CRC shopping guide. It should answer your questions. If it doesn't, when you tweet the CRC, they usually get back to you, and they are enormously, enormously helpful. Air fryer. I'm not positive about an air fryer. I didn't see it mentioned either. I don't think you can kosher an air fryer. Maybe there is a way. I'm not sure. I will try to look into that. Penny, remind me if I don't get back to you on the air fryer. Let's talk about cosmetics and makeup. And this is where I think there's a disservice by some in the greater community. So for many years, the CRC has published a letter that they write in conjunction with Rav Shmuel First, the Dayan in Chicago, and Rav David Zucker, the Rosh Kollel of the Chicago Community Kollel, for many years with Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Zatzal, who passed away this year, now Lahavdil Yibad L'chaim Tovim Baruchim, Rabbi Yonah Ries, the Abbezin of the CRC, and they publish a one-page letter called Medicine, Cosmetics, and Toiletries for Pesach. And let me tell you the rule of this very carefully and clearly. And here is the rule. Listen carefully. All pill or non-chewable tablet medication with or without chametz that one swallows is permitted. All pill, non-chewable tablet medication, even with chametz, is permissible. Is permissible. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, and he says, when you swallow the pill whole, it is not achila, it's not considered to be a food. So even if there were chametz in your pill, you are good to go. So if you take medicine, do not stop taking it. That's true for medicine. Vitamins and food supplements don't necessarily fall into that category. It depends. Is your doctor prescribing that vitamin to you as a medicine, or are they recommending it be a good thing for you to try, but it's not rising to the level of being a medicine? But a bona fide legitimate medicine, even if it had chametz, would not be chametz, and you'd be allowed to take it on Pesach. Liquid and chewable medications may contain chametz, should only be used under the direction of a doctor and a rabbi. So liquid and chewable might have kitnios, might have chametz, and you need to ask a shayla about it. Okay, if it has kitnios, it's not a problem, you could take it. If it had actual chametz, then it would be the problem. I see some are waking up. Yanki Schiffman, waking up to the BRS Global, is back alive. Thank you for reviving BRS Global. BRSonline.org/global, BRSonline.org/global. please come back and join us. We would love to have you in our global community. Cosmetic and toiletries. Very, very important. Listen up, cosmetic and toiletries. All varieties of blush, body soap, conditioner, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, foundations, ink, lotions, mascara, nail polish, ointments, paint, shampoo, and stick deodorant. Sounds like my kid's bathroom, that whole list. They're all permitted for use on Shabbos. On Pesach, regardless of the ingredients contained within them. Why is that? It's very simple. Something is only considered to be chametz if it's edible. If it's not edible, then it is not chametz. So you have never seen anybody eat blush, body soap, conditioner, cream, eyeshadow, eyeliner, foundation, ink, lotion, mascara, nail polish, ointments, paint, shampoo, stick, deodorant. All of those are inedible. Do not waste one moment looking up whether your brand of it is good. It is not necessary. They are not edible. They are not chametz. In order to be chametz, it has to be edible. Many varieties of cologne, liquid deodorants, hairspray, mousse, perfume, shaving lotion, sunscreen, and wipes contain denatured alcohol and therefore should only be used on Pesach if they do not contain alcohol or the alcohol is known as free of chametz. So some of those products have denatured. Denatured alcohol can be consumed. There are, in fact, alcoholics who are being prevented from drinking alcohol and they will drink cologne or liquid deodorant. That's how addicted they are. They are edible. So that potentially is a problem. So there it is good. Star K has a great list and you can check out the great Star K list for the colognes, liquid deodorants, hairsprays, and mousse, perfume, shaving, and sunscreen. But, or you could look at the ingredient panel. If they do not have denatured alcohol, then you're good to go. And lastly, lipstick, mouthwash, toothpaste, which contain chametz, should not be used. Lipstick, mouthwash, or toothpaste, if they have chametz, should not be used. Again, the Star K generally has a good list. We're happy to help you out. You can call our office. If you don't have access to that list, we are happy to help you. The CRC guide also has a cosmetic and medicine list beginning on page 78. Medicine and toiletry in details. Everybody wants to know. If I had a dollar for every Tums question I get for Pesach, Pesach and Tums go together. So everybody always wants to know about Tums. They, in fact, have two paragraphs on Tums on page 79. So if you have questions about your medicines, if you have questions about your toiletries, they have a long list of deodorant, liquid and spray, lipsticks, Bobbi Brown, Chanel, Clinique, Estee Lauder, L'Oreal, Lancome. They have long lists of all the lipsticks. You can go onto the Pesach guide. Again, you go to crcweb.org, crcweb.org, download the Pesach guide, print it out, read it online, get the app, it'll answer your questions. This just in from Rabbi Fagelstock, thank you again for your help. We should do this together every year. Sous vide should not be kosher for Pesach. According to the OU, you cannot kosher a sous vide for Pesach. Rabbi Fagelstock, air fryer. If you could check on an air fryer, that would be a big help. That would be a big help. Yeah, a mat for an induction cooktop. The pot sits on it and it still conducts electricity. I assume if you get a Pesach version of it, meaning I assume you can't kosher the mat, you can't use the same one that you use during the year, but if you had a Pesach version of it, it probably would help. But you, I think, need to kosher anyway, pouring boiling water on that induction stovetop. We didn't mention tablecloths and towels. They can be cleaned. Put tablecloth or towel through the laundry, it's good to go for Pesach. However, what are they called? Not the ones that can go through the washing machine. I'm blanking out on the word. Other kinds of tablecloths that can't go through the washing machine, you cannot use the same one. You have to get a Pesach version of it. What do they call the other kinds of tablecloths? It's much more fun when we do this in person, and you can yell out at me. What's it called, the other kinds of tablecloths? Tablecloths. Here it are. Fabric. Fabric tablecloths can be used for Pesach after being laundered. Vinyl, that's the word I was looking for. Vinyl. Lionel. I knew it wasn't Lionel, but it sounded like Lionel. Vinyl. Vinyl tablecloths cannot be kashered and should be replaced for Pesach. Okay, so we've taken care of medicine and toiletries. We went on a tour of the house. We went on a tour of the kitchen. We come back to Ravitchemeyer Morgenstern. Don't forget to get ready to let the light of Pesach go through you, to lean in and to be enriched and elevated, to go through this experience, a little bit of Avda, so when you come to the Pesach Seder, you come like royalty in order to be liberated and free. And I think that is it. If you have other questions, if you're a BRS member, a BRS Global member, feel free to text or email me, and I'm happy to try to answer them for you. Thank you for joining, as always. I want to wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Tomorrow morning, Parsha Shir, 9:30 a.m., tomorrow, what else? Wednesday morning, we have 10 minutes of meeting with Silas Hasharim and Living with Amuna. Wednesday night, we go Behind the Bima. Tremendous program this week. And Motzei Shabbos, Shabbos HaGadol, we got a great drasha prepared for you. Growing community larger and smaller at the same time. this Motzei Shabbos, 9 p.m. on our YouTube channel. We're live in person in the Boca Raton Synagogue. Join us Motzei Shabbos for the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha. Very excited for that. And until next year in Yerushalayim, all together, with no masks and no distancing, have a Chag Kasher v'Sameach.